Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Views podcast for May the 13th, 2022. This is episode number 110. On today's show, we'll be talking about driving the Ford F-150 Lightning, Rivian Q1 production and financial results, and Volkswagen is sharing its plan to bring adventure vehicles, we think, to the U.S. I'm Dominic Yoni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is savant and bon vivant, Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the meticulously manicured Mr. Martin Lee from the recently revamped EV News Daily podcast, which he promises will be back soon from hiatus. And when it is, it will be available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of AutoSpec Studios, from where they produce shoot 'em up videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Okay, so before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the channel. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can ring that bell icon for notifications and do that, because there may be a show on Monday that you might not want to miss. So yeah, with that out of the way, welcome everybody. So on today's show is sponsored by Holley, who are once again putting on the Holley High Voltage Experience. I don't know, Martin, can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Yeah, this is so cool. I'm really jealous that we don't get anything like this so cool in this country, but there's nothing stopping me jumping on a plane, is there? Let's face it. It's like an adult playground for EV enthusiasts. Now, I've never been to Sonoma, California, so I should come along and tick that one off my list. But look, if you love stuff like drag racing, there's road racing, there's autocross, massive car show there as well. And some of the biggest personalities in EV world, because, well, Kyle was there last year. But don't let that put you off. So he may even go back this year. There's builders, there's drivers there. If you want to push your EV on track, you can. And if you want to just catch up with like-minded people in the EV community, whether you just want to learn more about these really cool cutting-edge vehicles, then head along to the Holley High Voltage Experience. Yeah, they sponsored us about this time last year, actually, and came back and said, hey, can we sponsor the podcast again for a few weeks and just tell all of your viewers, your listeners, about the events, of course, which you're very welcome to, because we want to come along to it anyway. You can learn more, and you can register to attend today. The website you can see on screen, and for our audio listeners, it's holleyhighvoltage.com, H-O-L-L-E-Y, highvoltage.com. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I was at a big EV event over here, and I was said to you guys, like, one of the things I noticed this year was how many EV curious people were there. And so, yeah, I guess some of the guys might go along to this year. It'd be interesting to see what that mix is like in California, in the US. So, and maybe I'll even jump on a plane and come over for it, because it looks very cool. It's July. Good excuse for a holiday, right?
July 9 and 10.
And Martin, one of the things you mentioned last week about the show, how so many EV curious people were there, I can say 100% you're correct. I've been following and talking about EVs for a long time now. We've already talked about that on the show. Back, you know, 10, 12, 13 years ago, where we had electric vehicle meets, and it was just like six geeks talking to each other, you know, and people would walk by and look at us like, you know, God, those guys are really weird. And then we started to get a little bit more EV curious people. And you know who one of those people were?
Go on.
Kyle's dad.
Wow.
So Kyle's dad was like into EVs way back when, and he started coming to our electric car meets, and he brought Kyle. Kyle was like this little punk that he was like, you know, causing trouble at our EV meets.
Oh, I can't believe it.
It was really cool how we circled back years later, and you know, Kyle's doing this now, and I still get to communicate with his dad, but he was like one of the first group of like people that were involved in EVs and would come to these meets and talk to us. But now, as you mentioned, it's just like every day, everybody, you know, you have an electric car meet, and people are just walking by like, oh yeah, my neighbor has one of those. My brother has one of those. That's gonna, my next car is going to be that. So it's not just a bunch of like geeks, you know, talking about kilowatt hour anymore. It's like everybody is interested in these things. And that's so cool to have been part of it from the beginning, to where I used to own a restaurant in Montclair, New Jersey. I used to have electric car meets like every month. and it would just be the same people, and nobody wanted to talk. Someone would walk through the parking lot, would be like, "Hey, come here. Do you want to talk about our electric cars?" And they'd be like,
"No, stay away. Move
faster away from us." You know what I mean?
Wow.
But it's so cool to see how like it transitioned from that to where it is now, where everybody's interested, and that leads us up to what we're going to talk about today. F-150 Lightning, because you know, once electric pickup trucks hit the market, and I've said this years and years ago, this is America is a pickup truck land. Once we have electric pickup trucks, then I mean the barn doors are open, you know, and we're there now, which is really exciting.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about the Lightning coming up, but we got a couple of things that we wanted to mention first, things that we've been driving this week, and Kyle, we want to talk about your second video. So Last week we talked about the great EV race from Fort Collins, Colorado to Las Vegas, Nevada. But part two of that contest just went up this week. So now we can talk about the result and maybe the top strategies. So if you missed last week's show, here's the setup. There's five cars, Hyundai Ioniq 5, Porsche Taycan, Tesla Model 3 Performance, Ford Mustang Mach-E, and Tesla Model X. So they're racing for like 800 miles, basically, but no one can go more than 5 miles an hour over the posted limit. So then the race comes down to a battle of charging networks as well as a contest between different cars. So Kyle, can you tell us which car won, and did a charging network win? And maybe tell us like the winning strategy.
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag because it's all over the place. So I'll explain the theory. When we set out, we obviously didn't know what to expect. You know, we've had nothing but huge success at Tesla superchargers over the years. I've hit, I would say, one of not the highest in the country, but I got to be in the top 10 of number of superchargers visited. You know, been all around, nothing but great experiences. And during this test, this challenge, the Tesla network didn't perform optimally. There was a couple different spots where especially Drew in the Tesla Model 3 had two different charging errors, had to move the car, and that cost him some time. And, you know, this is the first of many different races on many different routes and many different cars. We're actually in process of setting up New York to Los Angeles now and some big boy electric cars. We're talking Lucid Air, Model S Long Range, the big stuff. Okay. This test was really Electrify America versus Tesla superchargers. And surprisingly to some, not to me, the EA network won. But what was really surprising was second place. We all know the Taycan's just a monster road tripper, not the best range on paper, not the best efficiency on paper, but its charging is so huge. It can do 270 kilowatts pretty deep into the pack. And, you know, I know how to optimize that car really well, pulling in dead, charging it to 50 to 60% state of charge and heading out and going to the next, you know, that theory works. The other drivers had some different strategies. Some didn't even, you know, try, you know, to race, even though it was called a race. So, you know, we got to really remind people what race means on the next one. But essentially, Taycan won, Ioniq 5 second, Model X long range, brand new car third, like a hard third too. Model 3 just after that, and then Mach-E last place. And
so ID4?
Did not have an ID4 there. It would have lost. It would have come behind anyway.
Okay. I don't know why I'm thinking ID4.
Everyone was asking for an ID4, and I'm like, why? It's not relevant. We're talking 200-plus kilowatt charging rate world here, and so I don't know. We can bring an ID4 next time. You can see what I'm talking about. It would be interesting to see ID4 versus Mach-E. That would be an interesting one.
Right.
But yeah, I would say the order after doing the trip is as it should be. Even if people optimized a little differently, I was pretty comfortable with how all the cars came in. It was a big trip and more to come since people seem to like this stuff.
So did the Porsche Taycan beat the Ioniq 5 because you were driving the Porsche Taycan? Was it because of your strategy or could the Ioniq 5 go as well as the Taycan?
Well, I don't think I hurt the Taycan's winning position, but I think, you know,
should put you in the Mustang.
If basically what I really wanted to do on the way back was to switch cars. I wanted to drive the Ioniq 5 and give Jordan and Zach the Taycan. Our schedules didn't line up. We decided to take an extra day of vacation in Vegas and hang out with some friends. Yeah, I for sure the Taycan's a faster road tripper than the Ioniq 5. I have no question about that.
Oh, okay.
But by how much is the question, you know? And then, you know, we're talking very minimal difference here. But then when you look at the price, it's just the Ioniq 5 is the clear choice if price is factored in, because that car is half the price of the Taycan and smoked just about everything. And if Jordan and Zach optimized a bit more in that series, they probably could have been within 15 to 20 minutes of the Taycan.
Wow. Kyle, you know what would have been really cool? Or, I mean, you see, this generated a ton of interest. I mean, the videos were awesome. You killed it. You know, tons of views. And I'm sure you're already thinking of this, but definitely a series of these. You know, like you talked about Lucid, Mercedes, you know, top of the line, BMW i7 when that comes out. But maybe, you know, I would be more interested if you made categories, you know, rather than you did everything on this. So, you know, what I want to see next time is ID4, Mach-E, Ioniq 5, EV6, BZ4X, you know, the direct competitors go at it and throw in an MX-30 just for kicks.
Oh, my
goodness. No, seriously. throw that in. I'll volunteer to drive that one.
Hang on.
In
the race. It'll be 3 weeks of Tom podcasting from the MX-30.
You know, and then do the next thing. Then do the Rivian and the Lightning. You know, do these in categories. Do a series of them, because I think having direct competitors is more interesting to me than seeing a Taycan beat an Ioniq 5. They're not cross-shopped electric vehicles, you know. But I'm interested in a crossover. But I do drive 700, 800 miles a couple times a year. Which one's the best one for me? And now I can go right to your video and say, look, this is it. So I mean, just I think that would be really cool if you did that way.
Yeah, totally agree. And that is 100% the plan going forwards. And then, you know, what would be interesting as well is, you know, EV6, Ioniq 5, monster charging cars. If we just throw that in as a cheap option to like a luxury car race, it still might win. We just don't know. And so, yeah, I totally agree. That's the direction. It's just scheduling, it's timing, it's lining it up, finding the cars that we can put that many miles on. We intend to do more of them until people get bored of it.
All right.
Keep them coming.
So before we get start talking about the big deal electric pickup today, I understand that Tom, you had a Rivian R1T last weekend. I don't think you had it for very long. So did you do anything interesting that you wanted to share about it? I didn't see any charging curve videos this week.
Yeah, so I haven't put anything out yet because I only had the vehicle. I was supposed to have it for 3 days, right? And they give me the 3 day loan, and I'm looking as it's coming up closer and closer. It's pouring, raining all 3 days. So I went back to Rivian and was like, look, you got to give it to me for one more day. Like, you have to push somebody else's schedule back because I can't do range testing and charge recordings if it's pouring, and it was pouring rain. It wasn't drizzling. Right. So they gave me an extra day, nice enough, kind enough to them. And in doing so, I then had to return it to their Brooklyn delivery center, which is, you know, it's a hassle for me to get there from Northern New Jersey. But I did it anyway. It was actually cool because I got to go there and see the whole delivery center. And there was like 100 Rivians sitting there waiting to be delivered and everything, which is kind of cool to see. Sweet. So anyway, so you could see it's wet. So even the day that I did it on, it was a slight drizzle. For some of the range test, and it was in the 40s, 50s. So really not optimal range test, you know, and it showed in the results. Kyle did just about the exact same vehicle on his channel, what, 2-3 weeks ago, Kyle, something like that, a month ago. And he ended up with 293 miles, which is exactly the EPA highway range rating for the R1T. But that's the R1T with the 21-inch road wheels. So Kyle did much better because Rivian says the 20-inch off-road wheels that we have, all-terrain wheels that are on this truck and Kyle had, doesn't have a separate EPA range rating. But on the Rivian's website, it says expect a 40-mile range reduction. So Kyle actually crushed it in his range test, hitting the EPA range for the 21-inch road tires when he did it. I didn't have as good a result because I think it was a lot because of the weather conditions. And also we had up to a 16 mile an hour wind. It was windy. It was raining. Finished up with 253 miles, 40 miles less than what Kyle did. And that, you know, that really rarely happens when he and I do the same test and it's that much off. So I think it was a good idea of what you can expect in great conditions when Kyle drove it. And then you take a look at what you can expect if it's really not so great conditions, if it's windy, if it's drizzling. So, you know, you're kind of in that range, 250 to 290 miles in the Rivian R1T at a constant 70 miles an hour. I think you can kind of bank on that.
Well, that's like 40 miles, exactly what the website said. So it sounds like they have that like predicted very, very precisely.
Yeah, but not really, because we both had the same spec vehicle, Dom. Like if he had the 21-inch road tires, then I'd say, oh, yeah, look, it was perfect. But
he did
that with the same vehicle that I had.
Oh,
it was
okay.
The same vehicle, the same spec. So
right. I was thinking he had the better tires.
No. We should have been within 10 miles of each other is what I was expecting. So I was disappointed knowing that when we go into these blind, we really don't know what we're going to get. But when I do it after Kyle did it or vice versa, we kind of know where this is going to end. And as the range test was going on, I'm like, I'm not going to even sniff what Kyle did here today. You know, but it was windy, it was rainy, and that's what you get.
Right on.
Yeah, but keep in mind, you know, there's nothing we can do to alter results. The vehicle does what it does. And, you know, occasionally there's different traffic conditions between Tom and me. We have slightly less air density where we are, but that does factor slightly. But it seems like accumulation of just like all of these little things led to this big disparity. And it's a good range, as Tom was saying. You know, that's why we do our test. That's why, honestly, we should do a summer and winter test. However, it's very difficult to align, you know, the cars up at the right times and different, you know, in the same part of the country. As Out of Spec and Inside EVs video gets a little bit bigger, maybe that's stuff we can do into the future a little bit more easily, but we're still low on the totem pole in the automotive world. And so at least at Out of Spec. And so we got to get the cars when we get them.
And also, Kyle, I see. So the R1T has 135 kilowatt hour battery pack, but that's the total capacity. Rivian hasn't published the usable capacity. So that was one of the questions that Kyle and I both had. Okay, what are we going to be able to pull from this thing? Kyle finished up with 124 kilowatt hour, right, on your on the trip meter. So I actually squeezed out a little bit more, and I ended up with 125. So I think it's fair to say, you know, right around 125 is the usable capacity. 135 is the total capacity. So they hold about 10 kilowatt hour as a buffer.
I would agree with that 100%. And similar, because I did just aside from that range test some other full charge to zero just stretches driving, you know, distances, and would always come in that mid 120 kilowatt hour range, never more than 125. And so, I'd say you're spot on there, Tom.
And that's me at the delivery center in Brooklyn, New York, when I went to drop it off. And it was crazy. Like, nobody would let me take any pictures or video or anything. So I got in touch with Rivian, the PR. And they're like, they called up. They're like, yeah, let him. He's there now. Let him take pictures. But they were like super concerned that, you know, nobody was supposed to take pictures of this. But I don't know why. I think it's, you know, it's cool that many of them are there in New York, you know, with customers coming every day to pick them up.
Can I ask, are people seeing the Rivian and being excited, you know, charging stations or people waving when you're on the road? Is it cutting through in the way that the F-150 Lightning seemed to?
How about for you, Kyle?
Oh, everyone, way more than the Lightning. People are excited about the Rivian, I would say. I saw one yesterday at a charging station in Asheville, North Carolina. I freaked out. I'm like, oh my God, look at this thing. And it was in the new limestone color. I'm like, this is great. And when I had the Rivian, literally add an hour to your long trip because you're just going to be talking to people.
Yeah, I had the same thing. A lot of people, everybody wanted to stop and talk to me. The funny thing is the chief of police of the town where I live in, Chester, actually like got my phone number, you know, and called me and was like, look, you know, and I know him just, you know, casually, not really intimately. And he's like, you know, this is Chief Williver. And, you know, I hear you got this new electric pickup truck. Would you mind if we went for a ride? So I'm like, sure. So, yeah, everybody's interested in it. But I will say this, Martin, I couldn't believe when I was on the Lightning drive, which I know everybody's probably waiting for us to talk about. I couldn't believe how many people stopped me, waved, and And I'm like, you can't tell this is like the grill's different. The front, it says Lightning, right. But it's right. Just an F-150 pickup truck. I couldn't believe how many people stopped me. I pulled over for 1 second because I had to readjust my cameras into like a tire place where they change tires and whatever. Everybody came out. There were like 10 people just walking out at me at once. I was like, am I getting like jacked? I better get out of here, you know? And they're all just walking around it and everything. And I like couldn't back out. I had to stop quickly and keep recording. And they just wouldn't let me go. And then I was sitting at a red light. And a car makes a left-hand turn in front of me and is pulling in front of me. And as he's in front of me, all I see is like this. And he's like, and I'm like, how did he pick that up? Like 2 seconds driving by me. So
yeah.
People, it was Texas, and you know, Texas is pickup truck land. So I guess they're tuned up and ready for this then.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, so I guess let's talk about the Ford F-150 Lightning. So both Tom and Kyle have driven it. Tom has a video with the very best opening sequence on the Inside EV's YouTube channel that you have to check.
Yeah, can we can play
can we
that.
Show everyone.
Yeah, I can.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
Can
let's show that. Yeah.
Giving birth to Tom.
Here we go. Right. Hang on.
Well, it was Inside EV's, so we get Inside EV's.
Literally Inside EV's. Hang on, let me press play.
Go big screen.
Oh, can I do big screen? There we go.
Yeah.
That's so good.
So if you're listening to us right now, we're watching a video of the Tom's video for Inside EV's channel with the Ford F-150 Lightning, and he magically appears out of the power trunk. Mega power.
I'm Tom Allegheny for Inside EV's, and this and the Ford F-150 Lightning.
So good.
And it's funny, when I was recording that, there was another journalist just happened to be walking by as I had my camera set up, and he stopped, and he went, damn, I wish I thought of that.
Yeah, it's a great
awesome.
Start.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It certainly caught people's attention. That's how to stop. That's how to get retention on a YouTube video, yeah. Right?
So if you haven't watched it yet already, it's only 23 minutes long. So go ahead and watch it. It's very good. And to Kyle, you have two Lightning videos. One is over an hour long and goes on. It goes over
four videos. What?
Four
Lightning videos. One going live right after this podcast.
Wow. Okay. You're a busy boy.
So the first one is like a general explainer with you're in a Lariat trim driving because you think that's the most popular one that's going to be, you know, people will choose.
I don't think. I had a chart that said it was.
And okay.
So I said, I love that one. Yeah.
Right. So in your video, you go over driving dynamics and a lot of geeky stuff. And it's really great. So definitely watch that. And then you have a video. And I watched most of that, but you have one also with the Ford Pro standard battery, so the most affordable Lightning option. And I don't know, I haven't seen that, so maybe we can talk about that in a minute too. What are the other two videos?
Yeah,
I looked at Overlanding. I didn't see anything yet.
Yeah, so those are going up on Overlanding probably today, and then later on early next week, we'll see some other Overlanding stuff. But
okay,
yeah, I mean, I can't wait to hear what Tom has to say about it because, you know, I get into the weird, nerdy driving stuff, and, you know, it's a pickup truck, which it not everyone's going to be buying it for the weird, nerdy driving stuff. They just need a truck that's usable, that, as I said, works for America, that is the right truck at the right time with the right capabilities. And in my impression, I am just so thrilled with how it came out. Just think it's a wonderful package. It's the right truck at the right time. Can't say enough good things about it, but everyone knows that I'm pumped about it. Tom, what did you think?
Well, I've been pumped about it for a long time, guys. I've been talking about this for a while. I'm happy that, you know, you felt the same way, that you seemed to be juiced up after driving it also, because up until now, it seemed like you were much more interested in Rivian. I mean, we had talked about, you know, that I might sell one of my trucks and you're like, oh, great, I'll buy one as long as it's the Rivian, you know. So, you know, so it seemed like you just weren't at all juiced up, but maybe because you hadn't spent time in it. Don't forget, I've driven in the Lightning already on Ford's Dearborn track with Darren Palmer. Darren Palmer was my pilot, you know, and we ripped it around that track a bunch
this
of times.
It's like a bumper sticker. And Darren Palmer is my, no. I never
yeah, exactly, right? So you know, I had a taste of it. I had already gotten up and close with the vehicle intimately at their proving grounds. So that's why, you know, I've been chatting it up. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty much everything I expected. You know, it felt a little floaty on the roads. Like you could feel the weight, like especially in the turns. You know, it handled much better than you would expect a pickup truck to handle, but it's no, you know, sports car. And I felt like it floated over the bumps a little bit more than what I would want it to. But, you know, maybe that's, you know, that's just the suspension and the weight that it has. How'd you feel about it on the road? I mean, it went over every road irregularity and pothole fantastically, but it felt like it floated a little bit. Reminded me of like a 70s Cadillac a little.
Yeah, well, does it have to do with it?
The combustion F-150 does the same thing with its front suspension architecture. What I found most impressive actually was going to IRS for sort of a full-size pickup truck, independent rear suspension, you know, instead of a solid axle leaf spring type situation, really keeps the back end settled down unladen. So when you're not loading it up with a whole bunch of stuff, it rides really nice. Now, that means you're giving up max tow capability. You know, like when we see medium and heavy duty, I'm talking F-350s, F-650s, big stuff. That you need the solid axle for with the integrated motor in the rear, and their technologies coming out from Magna and American Axle, I think, are the two working on those technologies. And have to say, really, you know, not a performance truck. It's very fast in a straight line. It's competent, but if you watch my hour long video somewhere deep into it, I, you know, hit some corners and I'm throwing it in tire squealing speeds, you know, at the limit of what the truck would do. ESP's freaking out. It's grabbing brakes. It's trying to be super safe, but totally agree about front end. Just real floaty up there. And I would like it to be turned down a little bit, but the combustion truck does the same thing. Here's the one thing I think we really should mention too, is just how great of an event Ford put on. In typical Ford fashion, it was really quick. Get off the plane, film overnight, get out, and then get out of the San Antonio. But the event was really well crafted to handle, you know, sort of soft roading capabilities, towing and hauling, general driving. They, you know, do whatever you want with the truck, go to a charging station if you want. And I really appreciated them giving us a little bit of an overview and then saying, go film, do what you got to do. Yeah. And it was
great. Pick the truck that you want. Like you said, all the different varieties were there for us. And it was just kind of, it wasn't like you're assigned a vehicle and that's your vehicle for the trip. They were just all parked out there. It was like, oh, take that one, take this one, take whichever one you want, do what you want with it, go where you want. Now, they did ask us to do the off-road course and a towing course, like that was part of it. But I mean, you could basically do what you wanted, and that was pretty cool. And as you said, they accommodated so many. This was a huge press drive. There was over like 130 journalists. That's huge for a press event. But that just goes to show you how serious they're taking this. I mean, they had a Model T parked there, and they were like, this is our Model T of this generation. Like, that's how important this is for this company. And I believe them. If the Lightning flopped, if there's components that break when you're towing because they didn't engineer it right, if the suspension can't handle the weight and there's all kind of issues, like if they didn't engineer this vehicle properly, it will set the company back, because the first group of people that buy these, that use them for work, that beat the crap out of them, that load them up with stuff, that tow stuff. And I'm not talking about the range, because that's physics. Like there's only so much they can do with range on a vehicle, it other than put a giant battery in it. So I'm push that to the side. But how does the vehicle hold up under work? If this isn't built Ford tough, like their you know, slogan, then it's going to set the company back. You know, we don't know that yet, really. It seems like they did everything right, but this first year or two is going to be hugely important when we get feedback from people that really use this thing for work and beat the crap out of it. If it holds up to that test and it can do everything that it can do, because it can do more than what a gas vehicle can do between the Pro Power on board. And I know the gas versions have Pro Power on board. They don't offload as much power as the Lightning does. But you know, the features that this thing has, it is just an all around better vehicle, except for towing. That's the one thing that is still, and we still don't know that with this short trip, we don't know how far it's going to go. I have a good idea. You know, when we towed, we were averaging like 1.3 miles per kilowatt hour. if you push that out, the extended range pack's going to be somewhere between 150 and 170 miles full charge.
On the trailer and your highway speed is going to be a lot less than what you were doing. So
yeah,
I don't know if you can take it as a comparable figure.
Well, no, I'm just giving a small example. You're right. It's not a perfect comparison. That's a small little sample. That's my guesstimate after driving it. What I think it's going to be somewhere around 150 to 170, depending on how fast you drive, depending on the size of your trailer and all that weight and everything. It'll be less in some instances for sure. On a windy day with a big trailer, you know, even with the big battery pack, in the winter, you might only get 100 miles. It's certainly possible.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking it'll come in at with like a big box trailer. You know, we did that, and Tom, you know this, and you guys know this too, but weight doesn't really affect range as much as the aerodynamic profile of the trailer. So when people are like, I got this much range with that much weight behind me, it's like, it doesn't make much of a difference. It's all about the shape of the trailer, as Gary Clark comments here. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's what it comes down to. You could have a really heavy but efficient, aerodynamically efficient trailer that will go farther, mm-hmm. and just depends on each individual trailer. Something I'm thinking about doing is benchmarking the efficiency of every U-Haul trailer, since people tend to rent those and it's a good benchmark to compare size. The only problem I have with doing that is sometimes they have different tires, sometimes they have different, you know, the bearings are greased on this one and that one's not. And so hard to say, but I will say, you know, we're getting our own standard trailer at Out of Spec that we can load up, that we can compare the range of all the trucks with a maintained, you know, basically the trailer. Just like there's a standard tire in the industry, we'll have the standard Out of Spec trailer.
So did you guys do any driving with the trailer?
Tom did. I elected, because I was on such a short time frame, to focus on some other things. I didn't think I could gain anything majorly useful from towing with it. It's got all the power in the world. I've towed with combustion F-150. It was going to pull the trailers they put on it, but I wasn't going to get any meaningful data out of it. So what did you think with it under load, Tom? You know, my impression was the thermals were really good on the truck. I don't think you were maybe driving it super hard down the highway. Maybe you did go on the highway. Tell us what you did.
So I was on the highway, yeah, but I didn't try to break it per se, like you do, you know, that's one of your niches and that's great, you know. So, I didn't have any issues with that. I elected to tow the Airstream because there were like five different types of trailers there. We had horse trailer, an electric boat, an electric tractor. There was a bunch of
that electric boat. The coolest thing ever.
That was so cool.
It was an Epic boat, and that was actually made by a company. One of the Aptera guys had a company.
It was called an Arc, right?
Yeah.
Was it Arc? Oh, okay. I thought it was Epic. I thought I saw it.
I'll try and find. I think TFL used that in their thumbnail. I'll try and find it for anyone watching.
Yeah. And it is the coolest freaking boat ever. And I saw, was it the What's Inside guys or Jerry Rig Everything? Can't remember.
Yeah.
But they went up on the boat and showed it inside. And I really, really wanted to do more stuff with the boat, but genuinely they were like pulling me out of the truck to get me to the airport.
Yeah. So I took the Airstream and I actually went with Seth from Electric. So the two of us hopped in that and took it for a ride. And, you know, we're not experienced truck trailer guys. So we're maybe a little bit quicker than we should have on some of the turns or whatever, just to see how it would feel. And then we parked and we went inside the Airstream just to you know, check it out because it was open and all the stuff in the Airstream was on the floor, like the seats and everything. We kind of put it all back and everything, but it was
better cool. Not tell anybody then, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, Ford's not listening. We didn't abuse it, but you know, it was a fun little drive, and it's really nice that they gave everybody opportunity to do that. As Kyle mentioned, I don't know if we got much out of that. I don't know if we can really translate too much out of that, but it was good that they had them all there just to show people they had a truck loaded up with plywood for hauling, you know, and I mean, that's how people are going to use this. So it was good that they actually went out of the way to set all that stuff up for us. But, you know, when I get my Lightning, which should be in a couple of weeks, it's in production now. Kyle and I have to talk because, you know, I know you want to do some towing stuff, and we've got to figure that out early on because we want to be, you know, one of the first people out there to do some towing stuff. I don't have a huge appetite to do towing with it. So we'll talk about letting you get some of that content.
So, yeah, we can figure it out. I also, so I've had a million questions, and I hope I'm not derailing too much about would I buy this or the Hummer EV or the Rivian R1T? And I always love when people ask me what I would buy. I'm like, I'm the weirdest car solution. Don't base your buy decisions off of mine. Why don't you tell me what works for you? And really, truly love the F-150 Lightning. The Rivian is still more of a smaller truck for me. It can shred hard. It does, you know, more broad capabilities. The F-150 certainly price is insane. And so I think I've come up with the perfect two truck solution for the out of spec family, which would be an F-150 standard range pro, no options except the max trailer tow pack and the pro power on board. Cool stuff. And I like the max tow pack because it gives you a secondary chiller in line with the first one. So you can double your cooling capacity, essentially. It's probably like 1.7 because of efficiency losses, but it's near as makes no difference, double. And love the price. Can't beat the price. You can't buy one. That's the thing. It's just like there's not enough allocated for the consumer market. So I've started a consortium on the forums. I love to just go on the forums. I think we should do an out-of-spec fleet group buy. We go and buy, you know, 10, 20, 30 F-150 Pros, either standard range or extended range, depending on what you want. And then we'll distribute them to whoever wants to be in the group buy. I don't know logistically how that would work or how we get fleet approval. The problem is you can't get the big battery on the base truck unless you're fleet approved with a fleet number. And so,
so you need to get fleet approved first. Right. Okay. Right.
A lot of people seem to want that battery configuration.
Just a standard battery.
It's a fantastic deal.
Great, though. I don't see any need for more than just the standard battery unless you're going to be doing towing, which it's not going to be that big of a difference between the two because you're already losing so much range with the trailer. I'm not saying if you're towing, get the standard battery. But it still charges, I hear, at 150 kilowatts or touching. I saw 174 delivered to the car on the big battery pack. So 150, I mean, that's fine. And like so much less expensive. So perfect two truck solution, maxed out Rivian adventure truck, daily driver, 800 horsepower, go shredded around
sport
and
truck.
Then the work truck. Yeah. Be like, oh, we got to move a car from this sport side truck, of town to truck. That side of town. Need to do stuff on the ranch, whatever it is. You use the base truck for that.
Carry on.
Go ahead, Martin.
How do the U.S. tax credits work with fleets? Because all I know about your $7,500 is it's if you qualify for that, it's money off next year's tax bill. Is there anything similar for, is there like a corporate version of that? Can companies still claim money off next year's tax bill as a company?
You might be able to get the EV tax credit. I'm not sure. It might depend on how you register the vehicle, but for sure you can section 179 the vehicle. And there's other tax qualifications you can do where you can fully depreciate the value of the vehicle in year one. And so that's a huge benefit. So if you take the $7,500 tax credit and you can section 179 it, you are just like in
no
the
tax
money.
That,
I mean,
yeah.
It's a free truck.
Yeah. I mean, if you had a big tax bill.
Yeah, most companies do.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. If it's applicable for companies rather than individuals.
Wow. Right. An individual can't section 179 unless you're doing it through a business. And I believe you need a weighted plate in certain states to do it.
And every business tax situation is differently. And that's why we had some OEMs didn't give the full $7,500 federal tax credit when they were leasing. You know, when you lease the vehicle, the financing arm gets the tax credit. But if the company didn't have enough tax liability, like BMW, when they launched the i3, they were only giving $4,800 and people were really upset. And they were like, look, this is all we get because of our tax situation. We'll pass along every penny that we get, but we're not going to subsidize, give you another, $3,000 cash on the hood, buy it. If you want the full $7,500, go buy it. So, it depends on every individual company's tax liability. And, if Kyle were to make a group buy like that, like started an LLC or something, I mean, you're talking $1 million worth of purchases. I don't know how much his ad revenue is for out of spec, but I would venture to guess it wouldn't be enough to cover, 40 $7,500 federal tax credits.
That'd be a lot. I'm sort of joking when I'm saying let's do this consortium thing. It probably could work we probably could put something together if there was so much need. But the thing is, we're years away from trucks becoming available. Tom is super lucky that he's getting his truck soon. And, you know, I really like the idea of the base truck because it just has more than what you need, way more than what you need.
And the interior was nice, right, Kyle? I mean, yeah. I know it was vinyl floor and everything, but like I got in it. I'm like, I could live with this. Like, as a work truck, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, true. I'd be kind of willing to sell my old Ranger to have like a Lightning in my garage. Like, I would have to, like, the cheap Pro standard battery would be all you need. Play for me. And it,
Pro
and
standard battery. Every work truck should be that. And the battery I thought was great. I really thought it was, you know, plenty, way too quick. Like, it does all the stuff. You'll never be late to your construction site in one of those things.
Okay? So you drove the regular extended battery. Range. You drove that in the higher trim, and it was, you know, super quick. You said it was a very linear. It was like, the farther you get up, it just keeps pulling and pulling and pulling until you're up, may hypothetically beyond, you know, into the triple digits,
kilometer digits.
So was the Pro version with the standard battery, did it have that same feel, or is it a little bit slower?
Nope. Honestly, the acceleration, to me, in a truck, not a big deal. I mean, as long as it can move itself out of its own way, right, I'm fine. And thought that there was very little difference between the standard and the extended range. The standard one still spun the tires too much. I got an issue with their drivetrain strategy.
I don't like that spinning tire thing.
So they use two permanent magnet motors on the truck, one front, right, one rear. Same e-machine, same motor, but different gear ratio on each, just to balance out some motor harmonics and maybe a little bit of drivetrain efficiency so they can prioritize one at one speed. But I think mostly driven by harmonics would be my guess, because you don't want this weird sound fluctuation going. With that said, motor's still dead silent while driving. Really impressive how quiet the drivetrain is. Very little torque ripple at low speed. Really good drivetrain control, I have to say. Two permanent magnet motors, no clutch disconnect, which is probably less of a need because you have flux-related losses with a permanent magnet motor. When you're in coasting, you can't, basically with an induction motor, you can just shut it off. You can't shut off a permanent magnet motor. And so I thought that was an interesting strategy, but with such a big battery pack and a big truck, I don't think it makes much of a difference anyway. Also, here's my issue with the drivetrain tuning, though. Ford, with the Mustang Mach-E GT, especially the Performance, and the F-150 now have chosen identical power outputs front and rear, just with a slight gear change ratio. What that means is, when you nail it off the line or mid-corner or trying to move it around a little bit, the weight moves off the front axle, but it still has the same available total power as the rear axle, and so you just spin front tires everywhere. Same thing with the Mach-E. It seems to me like such a weird decision. Why wouldn't you just go bigger rear motor on your primary? You know, you have to choose your primary axle, which in this case should be the rear to truck. And so give that a juicier motor, have the front there to supplement. And I would love to know why they decided to A, do their drivetrain tuning, so when you go wide open throttle at zero, it spins the front tires. Or B, why didn't they put a juicier motor on the rear? And just can't figure out that decision, both from the Mach-E and now the F-150, especially on Mach-E, because that's a performance vehicle. You don't want to be wasting power by spinning front tires every time you floor it.
Well, it might be cheaper to scale up using the same motor front and back. So you're buying
software tune them a little differently.
Right. I would say software tune them. So when you make that first initial hit, it's not giving all the power to the front axle.
Right. You can get it loaded over. It lets you torque it over, you know, when you brake boost it. So you got the suspension loaded up. Give the rear everything, give the front like 85%, and then at 5 miles an hour, then go full. And, you know, just to help it get off the line without squealing tires.
Because if I'm hearing squealing tires, I'm thinking that's not, you know, really, it's not super sophisticated. It needs to be refined. It's not.
It's fun to like show your friends.
Sure,
like,
it's fun. Yeah.
My truck, but like, it's not actually making you get there faster.
But you were getting chirping at like 50 miles an hour, right?
Yeah, it was up to about 50 miles an hour. The thing would lose front end grip. And I have to say, their motor speed calibration strategy was really good. Their traction control management I thought was wonderful. Their one pedal driving still not good from the Mach-E, and that's really my only major gripe with the truck, is just the one pedal low speed stuff. I found I preferred it with one pedal driving off and would drive one across the country without thinking about it. The charging curve was great. Tom can talk to about it a little bit.
Yeah.
And just really impressed.
Oh, look at this.
He's got it.
A charging curve on this. So, like, zoom in on that.
Hang on a minute. Let me zoom in on Tom.
Video's going up on my YouTube channel in about an hour.
Okay.
All right.
So, but this, just so you know, that's not an actual recorded full charging curve. Right. I recorded about 30% of the battery, 60 to 90 when I was there. Kyle did 50 to something. But this is based on the data that Ford gave me. Now, Ford went, I was there on Monday. Kyle came in on Tuesday, I think, the day after me. And did Darren come and talk to you, or was it Linda or Emma?
I spoke with both Linda and Darren about the charging curve. And
did they show you that?
We were
the only people. That's what they told us, at least. The only two people out of the 130 people that were there that they revealed like the full charging data to. But it wasn't as we usually see it, because it was charging power over time also.
Yeah, they were doing it on purpose. Yeah, I know exactly what they were pulling.
Yeah, I wish I had the paper here somewhere. So imagine this charging curve, right? But then stretched out twice as long. So, and it's not, you can't just compress it, because at certain, it might jump from, 10% state of charge to 20% in 5 minutes, but then it takes 20 minutes to go from 90 to 95. So it's not, you can't just do this. So I had to pick out the points where I thought it was really dropping. And that's when I created this. And the video that I have coming up explains what I did and why I did it. But I think I nailed it here. I think this is going to be really close to what the final charging curve is going to be on the vehicle. And the funny thing is, I plotted this thing out and I spent time trying to figure out where it was. And then I said, okay, let me overlay my charging on this to see how close I was. And it was nearly perfect, except for the initial plug-in, because you're going to get more, like Kyle pulled in 170, at 50% state of charge. He's not going to get that if he plugged in at 100%. It's not going to be at 170 when he hits 50%. So, I had to kind of disregard the initial plug-in. When you cut that out, it was almost perfect. And then I said, okay, Ford said 15% to 80% in 45 minutes. Okay, so that means it's going to need, with charging losses, it's going to need to pull 94 kilowatt hour in 41 minutes, because I added 10% charging losses. And so I drew a line from that, and I was like, shit, this is perfect. And that was just my first guess. I thought okay, this is going to be close, but I have two validations that kind of prove it out. So I think when you see this video come up on my channel in a couple of hours, I think it's really close, except for the 90 to 95% and on. It's hard to see. I don't know if Kyle, if you noticed that graph that they showed us, showed that on that graph, they were still pulling 15 to 20 kilowatt almost till 100%. And Ford's been super conservative with their EVs over 90%. So I'm not sure if the very end is going to be correct or not.
I doubt it. I think they do some weird stuff towards the end. But similar to you, Tom, I drove the truck as hard as possible to burn the battery. It was wide open throttle, knocked the shifter into neutral, big friction brakes, and I was not here to ruin their friction brakes or warp rotors or get them smoking, but got them a little toasty and was just driving down the highway. And I'm very conscious of other drivers and me, so I didn't do to the point where I think people were looking at me, but I'd take an off ramp and I'd go wide open throttle it, big brakes to the stop sign, and then floor it back onto the highway. And so this was after I shot the video review. I was just got a burn battery, heater on max, windows down, headlights on, and was so impressed with the thermals of the battery pack and the motors. You can get them to derate, and I think it's inverter temperature, or it could just be battery voltage sag. And I put that in my video, and I show their derating strategy so much better than Mach-E, and it recovers almost instantly. Mach-E, you have to park it, let it sit for 5 minutes. When you get it into turtle mode, the F-150, totally different strategy, world-class strategy when it comes to drivetrain derating, and it communicates with the user perfectly and couldn't even overheat the battery pack. The only time the battery pack got warm, granted I had the max towing pack, was during a fast charging session in 91 degree F temperatures at peak speeds deep in the pack with you know, after driving the piss out of it. And I was just like, okay, cooling, I don't think it's going to be an issue on this thing.
Right.
I agree.
Sounds very promising.
Yeah, definitely. So, and, you know, a lot of people were really hard on the Lightning, and they still are. Oh, it's only 150 kilowatt DC. You know, it's garbage. It's not an 800 volt pack. You know, the Silverado is going to be so much better. You know, you have to understand peak charging rate is super important. Yes, we, Kyle and I love to. So we love like Taycan 270 and all this stuff. But you know what? If it pulls 150, and it's going to pull more than slightly more than 150, if it holds that deep into the pack, it's going to be usable. It's totally going to be workable. It's not like, oh, it's garbage. You know, it's not a 800 volt system. I mean, Ford did what they did with this truck to make it affordable. And you know, you start doing 900 volt systems, the components are more expensive. You know, Ford, you can tell they wanted to make an electric pickup truck for the masses. And that's why the base version can come in at $40,000. In a couple of years, do you think they're going to have cooler versions? Yes. You know, no doubt Ford's going to do a lot with this. But as an initial vehicle to come out with, I don't think we could possibly ask for any more than what I've seen so far. I think the Lightning is absolutely a revolutionary vehicle for the company. And I think people are just going to love it. It won't suit everyone's needs. You know, I'm going to get the horse farmer in, you know, in North Dakota saying, you know, I got to drive 1,000 miles twice a month. Don't get the Lightning. Okay. But that's okay, because they sell 800,000 F-150s a year. They're only going to be able to make, by the end of next year, 150,000 of these a year. So this isn't the do-all for everybody, but I think it'll suit at least 75% of the people. Maybe even if it was just 50% of truck users' needs, that's like 400,000 or 500,000 units a year. They're not going to be able to produce that till like 2024, 2025.
I don't think they have any demand problem for the truck.
Oh, God, no.
No.
Businesses, like, you know, there'd be no, if they could make, you know, 100,000, 200,000 pros, you know, with the standard battery pack right now, they'd sell them this year. Right. You know, every business should buy one, because it's going to save them a ton of money, and it's going to give them more functionality. Oh, I mean, that Mega Power Front is awesome for businesses. Secured lockable storage up front, you know, with all those power outlets, it really reinvents the truck.
And it'll hold like what, 2 Tomalognis?
If I got in there tight, you know, well, it depends. Is Tomalogny alive, or is he moved on?
If he's
moved on, you might be able to cram 3 of them in there. So, I got so many comments about that on the Inside EVs YouTube. Yeah, being from New Jersey, bodies in the trunk. You know, that was great.
Bodies in the trunk. Hey, so just to wrap a bow on the charging. So peak charging is 150 kilowatts. Which is, you know, not huge numbers, but it'll say that high rate.
I think you could say peak sustained. The total peak is over 170.
Okay, so peak's at 170?
Yeah, roughly. So I saw 174 kilowatts delivered from the charger. The truck doesn't show charging power. Major fail. That needs to be fixed. But 174 kilowatts delivered with the fans ripping. That's using probably 3 to 6 kilowatts to cool things down. So we're very close to 170 going into the battery pack.
So and Ford is saying from 15% to 80% is 45 minutes on the extended range battery.
Yeah, 41. But they just chose random 41. Numbers.
41 minutes, 80, which is 80, right. Yeah, it'd be nice if they do it a standard like 10 to 80%, I think is.
And I still think that's silly, because I'm watching people plug in way below 10% everywhere and, you know, and charging way above 80% too.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, it charges the fastest, you know, at the lower state of charge. So it would behoove them to say, you know, 5 to 80, because, you know, that it would add some time, but not a lot of time. You know, the difference between 5% to 15%, that 10% happens really quickly as compared to the higher percentages, you know? So, you know, I mean, you know, I'm estimating, and you'll see this on my video when it comes up, that it'll get to the 15% in 9 minutes.
That's pretty good.
That's what my estimate is. So, you know, it's 50 minutes dead to 80%, which is long, but it's a huge battery pack. You know, talk a little bit about what I'd like to see them do in the future, and Darren Palmer and the team has promised me, and I'm sure they told Kyle that, look, we are going to continue to massage this curve and we're going to improve it. They've done that already with the Mach-E. They've already sent out an OTA update that has improved the charging curve on the Mach-E. We'd like to see them further improve it, but we know they're at least working on it. They haven't just said, okay, this is the charging curve, that's the vehicle. No, they're continuously working on it, and they said they're going to do that with the F-150 Lightning, and there'll be OTA updates to compress this time and make it charge even better down the road.
Yep. So that's not a bad charge time. It's not super great. I think so. It leaves other people a chance to, you know, compete with them on that metric, but it's something that they can improve over time.
Rivian's going to smoke them as soon as they can get their thermal management under. The Hummer EV is just going to wipe the floor of that. And so it's safe to say this is not a charging monster, but it is acceptable.
Oh yeah, no, it's a decent rate. Yeah.
And I will say there's very little incentive to leave the charging station early in this truck and try and make it to the next one dead. This is a truck you charge to 70, 80% and then head to the next charger, which I'm learning is actually a very relaxing way to cross the country doing these deep charges.
Right. But, you're doing
Kyle,
that right
that's
now.
Sorry, Dom. Kyle, that's if you can make it, if you're towing and you might need to squeeze every mile. So I talk about that in my video that we always say just unplug at 80%. But not if you're pulling a big trailer and you're worrying if you're going to make it. Now, they have an intelligent range estimator that is supposed to – I mean, Darren said that, look, this is going to get within 5% plus or minus. If you add the shape of the trailer and all this, it's going to take into consider topography. I mean, it won't take into consideration current wind conditions, but, you know, they've got a lot of things that are factored in. And their goal was – and they said in their testing – it's proven that it's accurate within 5% plus or minus. So, I mean, you should be able to know with that range estimator if you're going to make it to that next charging station.
Yep, that's a good point. You know, with trailer, it's always hard to gauge and totally agree, Tom. My whole thing, I think we can boil it down to as soon as you've tapered off max rate, see if you can make it to the next charger. If you can't, you have to wait as long until you can. And that works for any EV.
And you can even win range tests with it.
Right, longer.
So that covers like the charging, and we talked about so the on-road dynamics were great. So you drove it at speed into the corners. How did it feel when you loaded it up?
Yeah, soft, squishy. You know, not performance-y at all, really. I mean, balanced. It's nice, but if you huck it into a corner, which is how I like to drive because I really like to throw cars around. It's not that. It's a truck, right? And so what it really likes is to be treated with respect, understand its size, lean the weight up on the front axle, let the thing lean over, progressively add throttle. And everything is slow and big and movement, very similar to Hummer EV, although that's a totally different handling characteristic, but the way that you would approach a corner and it's just not that
so
needed.
The stability control kind of take care of things if you do throw it into a corner a little bit too hot?
It takes care of things a little bit too much. It's a little bit aggressive. I ended up driving with it on and off just to feel, you know, its natural sort of, you know, suspension stuff without the ESP getting in the way. But as soon as you get it loaded up, if you get any body oscillation on the truck, it just locks down the brakes. It's just like, nope. And then it lets go once it slows you down. If you're gentle on it, you can keep ESP kind of out of the way and it lets you do your thing. Very similar, again, to combustion F-150, not too different or too dissimilar. It's as expected and it's more than adequate. You certainly can get up a back road quickly if you had to, but the truck doesn't love it.
And what are the drive modes and which one would you choose most of the time?
Really like it just in the normal key up standard normal setting. There's normal, sport, off-road, tow haul. And so, just love normal mode personally.
But you liked it with one pedal off, right?
Yep.
So one pedal off and also in, but I thought you liked it in sport mode with one pedal off because of the little higher regen setting.
Yeah, I like that too for back road driving, but I don't think people are really going to be ripping these things around back roads. I mean, so it's just like, put it in sport maybe once a year, but I think you just start it, drive it, don't think about it. And that's the easiest thing about it.
Right. Right on. So any other on-road dynamics that you want to mention? You did a full
on-road stuff,
braking.
Quiet, comfortable, super good at munching miles. If you want the nerdy stuff, you know, I put up an hour video talking about how it drives on the road, so that's there.
Right. I just find it interesting. You were talking about the braking, like a, what do you call it, ABS, but because it's brake by wire, you don't feel the pedal pumping when it's happening, right?
Well, there are other brake by wire systems that actually have either a mechanical component to them or some sort of simulation of ABS feel. This one, you just hit the brake pedal and you don't hear or feel anything through the pedal, but it's fine. Okay. It's very confidence inspiring. The truck stops very well. Targets really quite a bit of wheel lockup. Typically what you want to do is you want to find about a 15% slower rotation speed than vehicle travel for the quickest deceleration. And I would say they're there, if not more in some cases.
Okay.
And I know there's no such thing as a typical F-150 buyer, but they flew you to San Antonio to do this test. Who is going to buy this truck now? And on that curve of F-150 buyers of all sorts, shapes and sizes, you know, who are these trucks aimed at now? And is it enough to bring those coal rolling diesel heads further towards electric, or are they a lost cause?
I think it's going to push them away, and that's fine. You know, I love diesel, and diesel's not going anywhere. We need big distances, trucks, all this stuff, not for a really long time. I think, and Tom, I think, would agree with me that there's enough applications, there's enough interest, there's enough excitement across a million different types of field. I don't know if you can quantify the exact person that's going to buy this, that it's going to work for. And, you know, if they could build an unlimited number, maybe then we would have to think about how do you convert coal, you know, diesel rolling people out of here. But right now it's just let them enjoy their stuff. And the people who want an electric truck will buy one if they can.
Yeah, Martin, you know, being in the UK, it might be hard for you to get your hands around just how ingrained in our culture pickup trucks are, you know, so yeah. You can't pigeonhole, I think, like who's buying this. Everybody buys pickup trucks in the U.S. They're everywhere, you know, so, you know, I mean, who's going to buy them? Whoever was, you know, savvy enough to put a reservation in, because for 2 years, nobody's going to be able to get them, you know, and I think part of the whole coal rolling thing, you know, is the people that are, you know, that are into that, I think, are really into, you know, the giant tailpipes, the loud rumble. They want to disrupt people they want people to look at their loud rumbling noise as they go down the road. You know, they want everyone to see the smoke coming out of the pipes. And, you know, the F-150 Lightning, while it's maybe an all around better performer than those vehicles, it doesn't give them that, you know, macho, you know, tough feeling that these giant lifted trucks that have smoke pouring out and you know have that loud noise as they're driving down the road. So I think they're last, but some of them will definitely be interested in it.
Here's an that's really a okay. Go ahead.
Oh,
go ahead.
Sorry, just for a second. If you see black smoke or you know just basically unburnt diesel fuel coming out the exhaust of a truck, it's wasted horsepower. A properly tuned fast diesel does not emit much smoke at all.
Right. Learning fast is Tom is a secret coal roller.
Oop. Yeah, I think so.
I bet in another life, Tom would be.
Hey, so that's on-road dynamics. So how about off-road? You did a little soft-roading, I guess?
Yeah, Tom, did you take the course?
Yeah. It was soft, like you said, soft-roading. You know, it wasn't anything heavy, really, like Rivian did with us, where it was like 45 miles up a Colorado mountain. It was a short little off-road course that, quite honestly, you know, a Model Y could navigate. You know, so you know, we went through a little bit of water and you know, climbed over a couple of rocks, but it was nothing that you could really judge its total off-road capability. But this isn't made to be an off-roader. First of all, it's right. Too big to really take this thing through trails and everything. I you know, so is it capable to handle what most Lightning or F-150 owners will experience off-road? Yeah, the majority of them, it'll be able to do anything it needs to do. But it's not like, you know, and the adventure vehicle that the R1T is. If that's what you're into, if you're really going to be totally camping and you know, the R1T is probably a better option for you there. But there's nothing wrong with that.
But you can mechanically lock the rear axles, right?
Big difference. That's the magic. It right. just proves everything I've been saying. And you know, it's just like virtual lockers are fine and will get the job done if you drive the trucks differently, which is lots of throttle and wait and wait and wait for software to figure this out. Software just hasn't proven to be that great for a virtual locking system. Mechanical locker, boom, done. It's so nice. You just progressively roll into the throttle with an electric motor. And even though one wheel's up in the air, the other is moving you along with that same power. It's so much better. And honestly, the other trucks are missing out because of it. The Hummer EV does have an electronically actuated mechanical locking differential on the front axle. And so that is nice, but we didn't really hardcore off-road that either.
They only use that in really the really difficult situations, right?
The Hummer program certainly was fun, but like it was like driving up my driveway. I mean, it was just like a dirt road, nothing really that exciting. And so really need to get the trucks out to Colorado on some legit trails. And you know, we've perfectly proved, I think, with the Rivian and a driver not optimized for driving a virtual locking differential, that wasn't the right solution, or the driver has to learn differently. With the F-150, it's not a rock crawler, it's not built for that. The motor hangs way too low. It's just designed to get you to the job site.
Right,
the ground clearance is only 9 inches or something like that. Rivian goes up to almost 15. It's just not built for off-roading. But it is nice to just go boop, lock, and you can push your way over certain obstacles.
Yeah. Hey, this is a silly question, but are people going to be able to put the lift kits on this at all? Without
hell yeah. Versus... We're going to make them. I want one so lifted, long travel. I want to make an F-150 Lightning Raptor.
Okay. I was thinking maybe with this rear suspension setup, it might not be possible, but okay. Ford F-150 Lightning? I don't know.
People lift IRS stuff all the time.
I'd have to take a look at it, you know? Yeah. I have a small little bit of lift on my Ford Ranger, but it came like that from the factory. It's special.
Right. Well, look, people will figure out to make anything taller and lifted in the truck world, and here for it for sure. Because I do think there is room for like a Tremor, which is like a halfway to a Raptor, or a full Raptor version of this at some point down the road.
Oh yeah. My guess is you'll see that in 2024. Definitely. Oh, yeah? They're going to have a crazy high performance version for sure. I mean, it'll be $100,000, but like, you know, people will buy them as fast as they can make them.
Yeah. If they have that same kind of look. I mean, cause the look of the Raptor, I mean, it doesn't just perform well, but it has that like
big, strong. Yeah.
Face on it. Yeah. All right. Anything else about the Ford F-150 Lightning that we want to talk about?
Can we just go over production again quickly so they get it straight in my head? Because Tom, you know, your article, your review, Tom, in Inside EVs began like, you know, Ford have a big problem here. Like, it's not the vehicle. They just can't. The vehicle's brilliant. They can't make enough of them. Yeah. So did they tell you when you were there how many this year, how many next year? Because I know that they're giving us their aspirational targets, but how many are they making this year?
They didn't release those numbers. Well, they wouldn't give us the numbers. They just said by the end of 2023, they will be at 100. Production will be at 150,000 annual.
But
they won't tell us how many they can make this year or how many they can make then. They're obviously not going to make 150,000 next year because it's going to take them to the end of the year to reach 150,000.
Right. So they will. They'll go into 2024 with 150K. Annual run rate capacity.
Yes.
If they can get the batteries and they should do, but still we don't know what's going to happen with supply chains.
So okay. I would think so, 100,000 so next year would be a great number if they could hit 100,000 next year.
If they can do $8,000 a month, they're actually flying.
Yeah. So speaking of actually, Martin, you showed us some pictures the other day from a dealership, some prices. So the Ford Lightning is, you know, got some good price points until you get up in the $90,000 Platinum Edition. So some dealers are putting some markup on. We had an article this week on Inside EVs talking about Ford will punish dealers, like find them $25,000 if they sell one of their demo units early.
Which they're getting way over sticker anyway than that.
Right. But they could, you know, Ford has other levers they could pull. You know, they could also limit like their allocations in the future if they don't like the behavior of the dealership. But yeah, no, this is, like you said, you know, people, dealers might just charge that $25,000 over and then, you know, more on top of that. Yeah. So you found
I was on Reddit, and Reddit were talking about the Reddit F-150 forum was talking about, and I'm not beating up on this dealership or this company, right. And they can obviously run their business however they want to. So I'm not criticizing them. Maybe I'm a little bit, but I went to their website and just typed in Lightning as a filter. And so whether they've got, it says in stock. And so, yeah, in stock, there we go. So the F-150 Lightning
in
white for $145. And I'm like,
Super Crew.
Right. I'm like, is that, okay.
Is that it's platinum?
I don't know what the, let me click on the spec.
I think with the medium dark slate could be the Lariat trim.
No, that has, that is a picture of a platinum.
No, I know, but maybe they put the wrong thing because it also said 320 miles of range, which you can't get on a platinum.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, then it would be a 320 miles of range they've put down. Right. It doesn't say what spec. It does come with a charge included for the $10,000 extended range. But
you know, for the amount that you're going to spend over sticker, you think they'd tell you what spec this thing is?
And that's like, is this just speculative? But it says in stock, and I don't know if they can say in stock unless it is arriving or they're ready to go. But and that's
in stock.
That's well, the no,
they've arrived at dealers. We
they
saw
have.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
I mean,
thought,
they registered.
I thought Monday they were supposed to start hitting. I didn't know that they were there already.
Well, we saw on Reddit a one in Canada. I think before the embargo even lifted, it was sitting at a dealer.
Oh, so. Yeah. I. But that would be the they did send. They began to send out the demo units, but not units that they can list for sale.
I see.
I think that's this week. Is from how I understood it.
The big question is going to be is their reservation system going to make any difference here, or is it going to be an Ioniq 5 situation or a Mustang Mach-E situation where some of the trucks go to reservation holders and others will just be available for sale on the lot?
So they're all supposed to be for reservation holders unless the reservation holder cancels his reservation. Then the dealer gets that allotment. Well, if it went to an order, right? If the reservation just gets canceled, the dealer doesn't get it. But if the person orders it and then cancels, then that dealer owns that vehicle. And I have to say one thing. I mean, we know this is going to happen. This isn't a reflection on Ford. This is dealerships. But I had a follower of mine reach out to me, and he sent me all the documentation, what happened to him. He was a first-day reservation holder, made the reservation, got the very similar reservation number to mine, got the email from Ford, configured the vehicle, gave them the deposit, got the email notification from his dealership that, you know, your order is complete, you're going to go into production in June the end of May. The next day, he gets an email from the dealership, your order has been canceled.
Huh?
So he goes down to talk to them, and he finds out that the dealership canceled his order and kept his truck. So they're going to do what evidently like what maybe that dealership that Martin popped up. They're just going to say, oh, yeah, it was an order that was placed that was canceled. And now we're going to sell it for $150,000 or whatever. So I actually did send this whole email chain over to Ford. I don't know if they're going to do anything about it, but I was like, look, guys, I know you're concerned with this. You know, you've been saying that you don't want to see this happen. I have a documented case here with all the day he had his emails from the reservation, from the order and everything. So hopefully Ford looks into this for the guy because, you know, I mean, he's crushed. You know, he ordered the thing a year ago and couldn't wait to get it. And now all of a sudden he doesn't have an order
and you can't
order like, one. So yeah, I mean, like that's lawsuit. Not Ford. Yeah. I know a lot of people say, oh, Ford, you know, you got to use the Tesla model. They would love to do that. They can't. There's laws in this country that don't allow them to sell customers. The vehicles have to go through the dealership. They're trying to change things around with Blue Oval and all this to change it so that they put in a mechanism that doesn't allow this, that all the orders are going to go through Ford. They'll be the only ones that can cancel them, but then the dealers get to deliver them and get a cut. They're trying to figure out a way of doing that. But I'm sure this guy wasn't the only person that this has happened to. And that's like maybe how you're seeing these vehicles show up for such a high amount of money. I felt terrible when I read that. I would be crushed if it was me. And there's one more thing I want to mention quickly. For those that do have reservation holders. So I got a call from Sunrun Ford's partner for intelligent backup power, and also to install ChargeStation Pro. That's a company that Ford's partnered with to do installations. They partnered with a different company for Mustang Mach-E home charging stations. That's Qmerit. So they partnered with Sunrun for this. So I get a call from Sunrun. Hi, this is your Sunrun representative. I'm your Sunrun Ford team member. I need to put you in touch with our installation person. You know, we have to get your house set up for your Lightning. You know, we see you're going to be getting your Lightning within the next couple of weeks. So let me put you through to your Ford installation pro. So I said, okay, I'll play along with this. I want to hear what they say. So I said, sure, great, that's great. They put me through, and the person comes on the phone, and immediately he's like, okay, we've got to get your house set up for this. I know you're going to want to charge your vehicle as soon as it comes, and we're going to have to come out and do an assessment, get your home ready to charge your car. So I said, okay, well, what's the process? And then we went through this whole thing. But what really bothered me about this was how they didn't explain to the customer that or ask them, do you need assistance with home charging? And they also kind of led me to believe that I needed intelligent backup power system. You know, like right, that wasn't, right. You know, I was never asked, are you interested in having your truck back up your home? It was just kind of like, we'll come out and do a site assessment. We'll see what it's going to cost to install right. intelligent backup power. If you're interested in solar, we'll do that too. But the whole gist of the conversation was kind of like leading me to believe I needed them in order to charge my truck, and that I also needed to integrate intelligent backup power. And that really bothered me. And so at the end, I just asked myself, I'm just curious, do I need this? I already have a charging station in my garage. And the guy was like, well, you're really an edge case. I assumed that you didn't have a charger, but the Ford needs 80 amps. You know, your truck, comes with the charging station, so you probably, I said, oh, I have an 80 amp charger in my garage. And he was like, son, he goes, oh, you're really an edge case, And he was like, oh,
well, that's okay. True.
Yeah.
The problem is an edge case.
The problem, Kyle, and as you know, is that how they presented this to me was that I needed it.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't, right. Are you interested in having an installer come out and give you an estimate? Do you know what we offer? Do you understand the difference between the provided charging equipment? Because quite honestly, the only thing you need really, if you're an F-150 Lightning owner, is a NEMA 1450 outlet.
Yep.
Because it comes with
that charger that comes with it. It looks great.
It comes with two chargers. If you get the extended battery pack, it comes with the mobile Ford Charge and also the Ford Charge Station Pro, which you don't need. You absolutely don't need that. Is it better? Yeah, it's better. But the 32 amp Ford mobile charger is going to fully charge your F-150 Lightning every night. I mean, unless you drive, 250 miles a day, then it might not go to 100% overnight, but it'll get close. So like there was no explaining. Like, do you understand charging? Let me explain this to you. Now I know they're trying to sell their services.
They're salespeople, but that's wrong.
And I hope if Ford is listening to us today, whoever at Ford, Ford loves our podcast. I know that Kyle can tell you, they tell us all the time. They watch the Inside EVs podcast, many of the Ford employees. You should have a conversation with Sunrun just so and maybe sit in on the calls on how they approach your customers.
Right.
Because, I have no problem working with Sunrun. I don't like that they frame this conversation that I needed this service, not that ask me, are you interested in it? Do you understand charging? If I didn't know anything about electric cars, quite honestly, right now, they'd be scheduled to come to give me an estimate on putting in the ChargeStation Pro intelligent backup, trying to sell me on solar. And I know that's how they make their money, but you don't have to do it in a way that leads the customer to believe that this is required, because it's not required.
Right. Monkey vlog. All right. So we should talk about something. We have a couple other stories we should hit really quick. I don't know. Anything else we want to talk about?
Can I just say that if anyone's watched that kind of subsection of YouTube genre, which is scammer kind of the scam, the people that get the scammers, where they end up like tapping into the CCTV of these buildings in India or wherever, and they're like, I can see you right now. You see, like, that's basically some sales guy calling Tom Malogny of State of Charge, being like, hello, sir, can I talk to you about charges? You need one of these. And I just love the fact that Tom's like, okay, keep going. Like, just like, he probably put the phone down at the end of that call, had no idea who he was speaking to. But that is like the one person you can't scam on charging.
Right.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't have anything against Sunrun. You know, I've heard good things about the company. But this, the way they've set up the call to call the first contact to F-150 Lightning owners is wrong. And I hope they change it. I hope Ford makes them change it. They need to say, the first question should be, you know, well, congratulations on your F-150. Do you understand how to charge your F-150? Do you need help with that? Because we provide installation services. We can install your Charge Station Pro. We can, you know, if you're interested in intelligent backup power, we can even go walk you through that. You know, will be your go-to to help you with this transition, you know, but it wasn't it. The whole conversation never asked me if I was interested or if I needed help. It was all, you know, okay, we're going to come. We're going to get your house ready for this because you need us to do this. And that bothered me.
This is the guy they called. This is the guy they called. They called this guy. Like, hey, and by the way, I know that I compared them to a genre like the scam. I'm not for a second saying that Sunrun are scamming or whatever. They're not. They're a great, legit company. I'm sorry for using that word. I didn't mean to imply that if it did come across like
maybe,
that. I'm absolutely
maybe aggressive
not.
Sales strategy.
It's just like a genre of YouTube videos that go after scammers. They're not doing this. It's just a sales guy that didn't know who they were calling. But hey, it happens a lot.
Hey, so let's move on because we're coming close to our time, so we should at least mention our other stories real quick.
Is there anything else to talk about?
There is, and we'll talk about more about because Tom Malogny is getting a Ford F-150 Lightning of his very own within the next couple weeks or so, and we'll be talking Ford Lightning for some time, I think, on future episodes, so tune in. So Volkswagen made some waves this week, announcing a strategy to bring an electric pickup and SUV to the U.S. market. So it is recycling the brand Scout, which was a model made by International Harvester from 1961 to 1980. The Scout was made to go off-road and was a competitor to like a Jeeps, Jeep Wranglers and Broncos. And so it seems likely that they'll keep that sort of aspect of the vehicle's abilities and make the Scout line adventure vehicles, I think, maybe a direct competitor to Rivian even. I'm not sure, but that's just like strikes me as what's possible to... So this isn't going to be a Volkswagen product per se, but they founded a new independent company that will develop and manufacture the new vehicles. Now, I think this is pretty awesome. So I wanted to at least bring it up, but it's really early days yet. And they've shown us some super basic designs, but there's not a whole lot here to get excited about yet. So anyone have a comment on this before we go on? No. Okay. That's what I thought would happen.
We've seen Ford do it. I think it's very sensible to have separate divisions and things like that if you are trying to get around certain laws, dealer laws,
right. or credit laws, even
things like that, because you know we've right. covered that off already. But it's your logo at the top of that dealer website, and as much as the average person doesn't know about dealership laws and associations and these kind of things, they see your logo. And they see, you know, your logo selling a truck for $145,000. And they're like, really, Ford? And it's not Ford. So to do that, to get if they can start selling vehicles direct and circumnavigate these things is probably smart. But I think they're up for a bit of a fight if they're going to try and do that.
So I forget what the time was on, but it's not going to be around. We're not going to see a Scout for a few years yet.
2026. Yeah, right. Designed, engineered, and made in the US.
Right. But yeah, I love the Scout look and the aesthetic and everything, and they're a pretty capable vehicle, so it's kind of exciting to me. I really hope they keep some of that just design DNA from that period. Anyway, so Rivian has announced its Q1 financial results, and they've also released some production and delivery numbers. Martin, it looks like they're making some progress, but the losses are pretty large and the production is pretty small. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I'm just like a broken record at the moment. It's really, really hard to be a startup. And I know that they are overvalued, according to some people,
well,
by, by, by their stock price and things like that. But and they have had the benefit of the doubt from the market, I think. But it's really difficult to get these cars out of the door. Rivian had their first recall this week, 500 odd vehicles for an airbag issue coming back. But yeah, just to look at the numbers on this. So they, and it's a little bit confusing, but yeah. They said they've built 2,553 vehicles. They've delivered 1,227. This is in the first quarter, Jan, Feb, March.
Right.
Compared to 909. Yeah. So, but I don't know if that is vehicles to retail or that includes Amazon vans as well, who I'm convinced that they're going to be.
So a third of this number is Amazon vans. See, two five 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 three. But those are factory gated, so that means like everything's finished. They're not waiting for any parts or anything. Yep. They're not. They haven't delivered a lot of vehicles, but that's not because they're waiting for anything. The vehicles are ready to go. They have to just get their logistics, figured out. But yeah, that's a third of that number roughly are the Amazon delivery vehicles. The was it? EDV 700,
that's
700 square feet, and they're making some headway on the 500 square feet one.
So as of four days ago, they've made 5,000 vehicles at their facility. They've got 90,000 reservations, and they said they're going to do 25,000 this year in total annual production.
It's half from what they had said earlier, but
which they halved, and actually by reiterating they're going to do 25, the market absolutely loved it. They were like 20% up if you followed these things yesterday. But
it's just this morning.
It's really really tough to do what Rivian, what Lucid, and the others are trying to do. I think we've got short memories as well. Like what Tesla were doing with Model S and then X seems like a lifetime ago, and it wasn't really, but. You know, it's exactly the same problems that these companies are facing, except they're not the same problems, because 8 years on, everyone is hyper focused on them. And Tesla were largely under the radar when they launched Model S. They were a tech company, and if you were into e-cars and stuff, you knew who Elon Musk was. But you know, microscope's on.
So when Rivian launched, their stock price went kind of crazy, and it was like, to my mind, it was like way overpriced. But then now it's taken the opposite direction. It was slid all the way down, like it was way over $100, and now it's like $25 or $23 yesterday. But these results, I think, have buoyed the stock price a little bit, and it's up again today. I think one of the big things is that RJ Scaringe said on the financial call that the company has enough cash on hand to build the phase one of the new Georgia plant, which will have 200,000 vehicle production capacity. And so they'll have enough money to build that and launch the R2 vehicles, which is going to be a more affordable price, a higher, they're going to sell a lot more of them. Yeah. And that seemed to calm the markets, and the price is up a bit this morning.
I had somebody on my show on the podcast, maybe it was pre-IPO, I don't know, a guy from Drake Star Partners on. He's an investor in Rivian, and I want to find out what is it that you see, because he invested in, I think, Tesla a long time ago, and he's a long-time investor in EVs, very experienced financial expert. I was saying to him, like, why are you putting your money in Rivian? And his take was, he's been around a long time. Everything he sees from Rivian is they're the real deal, that they've got the people, the tech, the IP, and everything they need to get through to. He says, because the Rivian's not about the R1T or the R1S or the Amazon van or the R2s. Right. He's like, on a 10-year scale, to be a big car maker, he thinks they're the real deal. So that was that was his take, and he's an experienced guy.
I mean, I think there's still some risk, but I can't buy stocks, automotive stocks. But if I could, I'd be looking at that Rivian stock right now. That's not financial advice. We can't give that here. Don't listen to me. All right. So
sure, real quick, sounded like it,
right? So last week, Toyota put out a little press blurb. I think we should talk about this real quick, titled Five Things to Know About the All-Electric Toyota BZ4X. It talked about the electrifying style of the BZ4X, power into the battery, performance and handling, and a couple of other things. and it mostly went unnoticed and unremarked upon until someone whose name I won't mention, but it starts with K and it rhymes with Lyle, tweeted out some info from one of the disclaimer footnotes. Basically, it was a warning, a saying at the bottom of this press release that the charge times given were under ideal circumstances and that it wouldn't charge as fast in cooler temperatures. And it ended with this: DC charging may not work on all-wheel drive BC4X when the temperature is below 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, obviously, this is bad. Very bad.
Well, if you take it at face value, it's pretty bad.
Right. If you're just reading this and out of context, you know, context is important here. This is like a disclaimer thing. The word may not is doing a lot of work. So this is just not good writing. And so the people making noise about this now, you know, about how this is very bad. And so Toyota went back and they changed the wording. Now it says, for the BZ4X all-wheel drive model, charging may slow down more than other models in weather conditions below 32 degrees Fahrenheit. It may not be possible when the temperature drops to below to around minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit and below. That's minus 20 Celsius. So we were talking about this a little bit yesterday on chat, and Martin mentioned that this is especially bad because the language is in a disclaimer, so it probably went through multiple levels of scrutiny, PR people, lawyers, and no one noticed that they were telling the world BC4X might not charge below freezing, which is makes it, you know, not a viable vehicle unless you're in like Southern Florida or maybe Southern California, not in the mountains.
Well, yeah, that first version says, because, you know, anyone who's been around EVs for 5 minutes, if you saw that phrase DC charging may not work when it's below 0 degrees Celsius 32F, you'd look at that and go, it's either not right or what kind of a dog of a car is this? And it took Kyle to notice and tweet about it, and then some of the other websites picked it up. I covered it on my podcast for Toyota. Very quiet. So they contacted, there's a couple of websites that I saw issued corrections. I think
Motor One brought up a story and they quoted
Motor One.
Tom.
I'm not sure Motor One issued a correction to their story. They might have been so early, or they might have come to it after the
I think we did it after the correction. Yeah.
So, but immediately I saw, I think, Talk News and Auto Evolution. They kind of went with the story initially, and then they've added a bit to the top to say, hey, Toyota have reached out to us to say, it's not true. Actually, this is true. It's minus four. We got it wrong. But
Reached out to me.
I did a whole 10-minute podcast segment on it. Toyota clearly have no idea who I am, and I'm quite happy with it that way because I don't want to fly.
Well, they know who you are.
I don't want to fly over that radar. I want to go under that radar. And I did like a whole 10 minutes on like who on earth makes a car that can't charge this cold. Well, if you do it, if you are designing it for hot temperatures, it's fine. But and of course they got it wrong. So, but it's not one person at Toyota. It's multiple levels of engineers and copywriters. And you know what big companies are like. I mean, like Toyota is the biggest of the biggest, most corporate conservative. This would have multiple levels of sign-off, and nobody said, hang on a minute, hang on.
Right. Now the temperature is minus four. How bad is that maybe?
Still bad.
Can I explain what I think is going on here? Because we haven't talked about the technical reason why this is in the disclaimer, which is lithium batteries and really any battery, they like to be warm when they charge, and especially up top, they need to be hot. And, you know, below freezing is typically the cutoff where you just can't charge lithium. They'll crystallize. It's just a irreversible way to degrade your battery pack would be allowing charging. Now, I have done videos about plugging Teslas into superchargers and it not charging. But what it does do is it takes power from the supercharger and runs the battery heater to get it to a point where the coldest cell temperature in the battery pack is above the threshold where then it can start accepting power. Right. Then the act of it accepting power and running the battery heater will warm up the battery pack. What I think they're trying to say here is the battery heater now can basically raise the temperature of the battery pack from minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit ambient conditions. However, if it's below and maybe there's a 60-mile-an-hour wind, the battery heater may not be strong enough to actually bring the battery temperature above freezing. And so that, I would say, is not alarming. I think Toyota's just very conservative. I don't think it's actually going to lead to many real-world issues. I'm not saying it's not going to cold gate. That's a whole separate conversation. We're just talking about accepting power.
Right.
And I think there's nothing extraordinary about the BZ4X's below-freezing charging situation. I just think they worded it all wrong, and that's all I was pointing out.
Yeah, right. Tom, some thoughts? Well,
Kyle's going to have to get one next winter and cold soak it overnight when it's below freezing and plug it in, see what happens. I just think this is just another example of Toyota not wanting to go the extra mile to make sure their vehicles are, you know, world-class vehicles. Toyota has more battery experience, battery tech experience than any a company out there, even more than Tesla. They've been dealing with batteries in their cars for 25 years now. And, if they can't figure out a way to make this, be at least as good as other cars or communicate to this public how electric vehicle charging works and why at very cold temperatures, it's a problem. It just shows that they don't have interest in making the best vehicle they can and presenting it to the public in the best way that they can. You know, it's just kind of like an afterthought, like, oh, yeah, by the way, if it gets 32 degrees, won't charge. Matt, teams that are interested in making this vehicle look good to the public so that it sells would be all over that and say, no, we have to figure out a way to convey this to people that so they understand, yeah, when it gets colder, it's going to charge slower. And in extreme conditions, it might not even charge. But they didn't have enough interest in promoting the BZ4X to take the time to present that the way it would be palatable to the public. And it just goes to my whole theme on how they're just not into EV. They want to continue selling the hybrids. And they're not putting the weight of the brand behind the BZ4X.
Right. Well, we're just about out of time, but yeah, they definitely need to figure that out because they're playing, they're looking at where the puck is, not where the puck is going to be in a few years, 3 years ago.
CEO of Subaru announcing yesterday that they are going to start making, they're going to have a new facility that will make combustion and EV from 2025 on the same line, and that from 2027, they'll migrate that to being pure EV.
So why even make combustion cars? Just make electric.
It's cause, like, this is the future. And the boss of Renault, Luca Di Meo, said this week that by going to EV, it's bad for the environment because it means that he has to cut off investment in making combustion engines better. And so that, to me, is such flawed logic that actually, because it was the day before the European Commission yesterday reaffirmed their 2035 ban on emissions in Europe, in the EU, apologies. And they're not specifying technology. So they're tech agnostic. It could be hydrogen. It could be anything else, but it can't be combustion. It can't be carbon dioxide. And so it was a day before. I get the feeling there was some posturing, but he was saying, look, don't tell us when we can't sell combustion because it's going to burn down the planet quicker, which is the most crazy. And I've owned two Renault Zoes. I like Renault, but the boss of that company using the weirdest mental gymnastics to avoid going EV. And this was at the FT Live event that Elon Musk spoke at. And he also said, hey, we're in on EVs. We like them, but please don't tell us to stop selling combustion. Well, like, just go EV. Like, this is the way. And unless you are, there has to be an exemption. I've not read the full EU.
And it's Renault. You don't, the combustion cars,
come on, it's not
how great are they?
This is not a brand that lives and dies on that. It's not Lamborghini, Ferrari, Maserati. It's not you're going to sell 2,000 of these Ferraris a year, and fine, carry on making these vehicles in 2040, 2050, because we still ride horses. But for Renault that has aspirations of millions of cars, then come on, just stop talking about combustion. Even if you think it, don't say it out loud. Anyway, it's my beef.
So yeah, we're over time. So I guess that brings us to the end of it. No, it's okay. That brings us. We don't really have a hard cutoff time, but it was probably 10 minutes ago.
Brings us to Kansas.
That brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications because there could be a special show coming up soon, Monday maybe. All right. Well, we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.